Hello, everyone. This is Mike Quinsey, Connecting the Light. My guest today is Frances Ray Key. Her mother died in 2010, and 19 days later, her mother began to communicate with her. And as a result of the many occasions on which she has communicated with her, she was able to write two books, book one and two, covering those communications, and naturally we're going to talk about those. She also is very active as a composer, and we will give Frances an opportunity to tell you a little bit about her work on that side. So welcome to the program, Frances.
Hello, so glad to be here.
Great. Now, I know that your mother, before she passed on, was quite active. Tell our audience what she used to do and what may have brought her to want to communicate with you after she passed.
Yes. Well, words can barely describe my mother, and I'm not speaking of her strictly as my mother, but just as a great soul and a human body doing incredible work on the earth all her life. She was a real seeker and an adventurer. She came here in World War II to the United States from Australia in the middle of the war on a troop ship. And that's sort of like the way her life went. She was unafraid. She was a leader and would venture into areas that other people wouldn't go, including leaving her Catholic upbringing and going on a spiritual quest and taking a lot of people along with her. On the practical side of things, she was a teacher, and she opened a school for children who were struggling in their schools, and also went into becoming a shelter mother. She opened her home up to teens who had been abandoned by their families, runaways, abused children, and so forth. And she took care of them in her home. Beyond that, she was just an incredible spiritual teacher in the way she lived her life.
Right. Because on your website, you have a short video clip of your mother making an address, and I think one is immediately aware from that that she obviously has a very good understanding of spirituality, and it seemed to me that she's used to giving advice and maybe messages of that nature.
Yes, I mean, it just exuded from her. And in that particular show, that was a musical I'd written called The Mountain of Peace, which has been put on by a number of organizations. And she was playing the role of an elder, which she was and is, and speaking about peace, about being an instrument of peace. Most beautifully, she spoke, and she helped to write that passage as well.
That was very good. Now, just so that we can get a complete picture here, what is your background that you feel would have led you into something of this nature? Because I'm sure you believe, as I do, that nothing happens by chance. And you must have planned to do this type of work when you came into this life. So what did you do sort of in your early days that might have led to this particular time?
Well, my mother and I were extremely close. She had a private school, and I was one of her students when I was real small. And I was always with her. And she took me along with her on her spiritual journey, and recognized when I was very young that I was already having experiences that included visions, very spiritualized kinds of writings. And she nurtured this aspect of me, for which I'm eternally grateful, because as a child, I could have been very lost without a guide such as my mother. And she took me to a meeting, in that happened to meet in a Unitarian church at the time. And It was a group discussing various ways of spirit, how spirit communicates with people. And as they described what automatic writing was, I was 10 years old at the time. I recognized what they were talking about was what I had been doing with my poetry. So I told them this, and they asked me to demonstrate. And I wrote. My hand went freely, and I wrote for them. And we only have that one sample of the many things that I did as a little girl. But, you know, it was quite profound. And so my mother would encourage my writing and encourage my spiritual connection to my guides. And we simply shared a lifetime of many, many beautiful and amazing miracles and experiences on that level. Now, we didn't plan, in the true sense of the word, for this to happen. As she got older and a little more forgetful and a little more weak, you know, I would encourage her to write the story of her life, but she just couldn't muster up the energy, and she would always say, well, you should be doing that automatic writing like you did as a little girl. And I also didn't pursue that anymore. But after she died, it seemed like the message that her life had embodied anyway found an outlet, and I was completely willing to open myself to it because I knew it was her. I recognized the source.
Right, so how long were you in communication with her before you thought of writing the books?
Well, I began writing it down as it came immediately on the airplane. Right. As I describe in the book, I was flying from Florida to New York to see my two daughters who lived in New York. And on the way, I looked out across the sky. I spoke in my mind to my mother in a questioning, loving way, not really expecting any kind of answer, just as a grieving daughter would, thinking about her mother. It had only been a few weeks. And I heard an answer in my mind, a very vivid and clear voice that was undeniably her. And I continued this process and was urged to write it. It was a knowing. It wasn't get a pencil, but it was a knowing. And I began to write down everything that I was receiving. I thought it would be a one-time experience on the plane that I had this amazing thing happen with her, but it wasn't. It continued and continued, in a great rush for many, many, many months, especially the first month. It was a constant flood of communication, and my hand would just write like the wind. Everything was written longhand, and then I, you know, went back later and typed things up.
Right. So whilst we're talking about the books as such, why book one and two? Did you not think of having one single book, or was there too much information?
There really was too much information, but also because I wanted to, well, first I was directed. I heard the voice say, that's book one. So, and I had much more written by hand that I hadn't had time to type up yet. So I wanted to release it to my family and friends. I didn't think of doing anything commercial. I copied these, I typed them up, had them copied, put them in little white folders, and I gave them to people. Mm. And I just said, this is what has happened, and I want you to have these. And I just asked everybody that received one to make a copy and give it to somebody else. So that's how it went for a good, you know, a good few months, I suppose. And then the requests for those became too great. You know, I had to get them printed in bulk. But as far as why it was book one, it was simply that I felt and was clearly told that's book one, and I wanted to get it in people's hands because to me it's such a great gift, such beautiful material that I just couldn't sit on it myself. It had to be shared. And yes, it would have been far too much information because even book two, I took out 100 pages to put towards book three because it was starting to feel like a manual rather than a book. Too much. It's very concentrated kind of material.
Right. So it sounds as though your mother must have come through almost on a daily basis for you to have accumulated so much.
Yes. For many, many hours per day.
Right.
I just worked a short, I limited my working hours, and I did nothing but write. The first book was written in 3 weeks.
Wow.
And then the second book was actually written probably within 2 months, but it just took a long time to get it all typed up, because then I was working full-time again. I just didn't have physical time to devote.
Now, I gather you're in the communications. Your mother seems to have emphasized the idea of all of us having spiritual teams who work with us, as she said, through every step of your journey. So would you like to tell us a little bit about her communications with you about the teamwork as such?
Well, yes, the opening of book one says, you are not alone. You're not even really functioning as one person. Nobody is. You are a member of a team, a spiritual team that is near to you as breathing, and I am part of your team. She describes that this is a partnership. I think a lot of people think about guides, spiritual guides and angels, but the concept of a team is actually more of a partnership. And she describes it, she compares it to, I'm trying to find this spot in the book. Mm-hmm. She compares it to a business person going off to a conference and representing an entire business at this conference when they make a presentation. And when they go back to the meeting with the team, that they report back how it went, what they learned, and so forth. But the whole time, really, they were prepared by the team, they were sent by the team, and the information from the entire team is flowing through them. That we do not function as individuals like we might think we do. I'd like to read that part of the book, if that's all right.
Oh, by all means, yes. Carry on.
Imagine a representative of a company being sent out to a conference. His head is full of facts and figures, concrete goals, and mile-high dreams, some of them confidential, and some that he's ready to make known. He has a mission to accomplish, and the hopes of the business are riding on him. His supervisors and co-workers have prepared him, and he has learned his lessons well. He has weaknesses, too, which both he and the others are well aware of. Before and after the conference, he is in touch with the team, but when he stands up to deliver his material to the audience, it is up to him to be the strongest representative he can be. Their words echo in his mind. Their faces are before him, and the notes they helped him to prepare are in his hands. More influential than anything he has to say, however, is the force of authenticity he brings to that presentation. After leaving the conference, he returns to his place of origin, filled with information about what was well received and what was not, where he erred, where he excelled. And it is this information that enables the team to regroup and plan anew.
Francis, you were talking about the opening paragraphs, I suppose, of book one, and that was in response to me asking you what your mother had to say about the teamwork, which you were explaining extremely well. Now, did you actually finish, or was there more to say on that one?
I'm not sure when we had the audio problem. I was reading something about the representative of a company. Did that come through?
Yes. So we'll pick it up from there then, and I think that will be fine.
Okay. So essentially, we are given the analogy that we come here with a mission and that we're representing not our individual dreams, hopes, aspirations, as many people often think. There's a lot streaming through us, and it's not necessary for every team member to be here at the same time. In fact, it's very effective for there to be some boots on the ground and some in the lookout tower, as she says. So, yeah. And the important thing of any mission is for the boots on the ground to have as clear communication as they can, or a good memory of what they were assigned with those in the lookout tower. And she says here, I think, a very important statement. I'm here to tell you that you are valued, honored, and needed by your team. And I'm here to tell you that by remembering who you are, the team to whom you belong, and the legacy you carry within your spiritual DNA, you can transform your entire existence. There's a lot of information about this concept of spiritual DNA, which is instilled into us by our spiritual parents, that we have individual spiritual parents. Just as physical parents create a child's body, our soul and our spiritual body are created by our spiritual parents. And we carry a legacy. We carry a DNA stamp. It's very important that becomes activated along the way, along the journey, along the path, just like it becomes activated in a child as the child is growing. The DNA strands have to be activated for things to operate properly.
Right, so did she tell you more about the spiritual parent side of our life?
Well, there's an entire chapter at the end of book one, and it's called The Gold and Silver of It All. And I think it's so powerful and deep that it's something somebody would really have to read and contemplate to touch upon. The gold and silver representing the male and physical forces or energy in the universe of which we're all comprised, and which our soul is created from.
Was your mother suggesting that we have simply the one set of parents, or is this for more recent times?
Essentially, it is explained that there is indeed the concept of a universal mother, a universal father, which is on the absolute level. But then filtering down through these levels are individual pairs, and that our soul is created by a pair of highly evolved souls who have a child. They are adults. They are mature. They are mature souls, and in a state of union, they create the individual soul that each of us, that we truly are. Just like physical parents make their babies, this is where the soul comes from. And yes, indeed, it comes from the absolute. It comes from God, the Mother, Father, God, in the vast sense. But beneath this vastness are many, many, many layered filters all the way down to the tiniest cell. And there's these universal principles that are operating up and down through those filters, through those layers, everywhere. They're all consistently the same. So like I said, it takes some reading, that last chapter, to really comprehend. But in a way, it's very simple, too. It's very almost common sense.
Right. So it rather seems that she's suggesting that the soul originates from the universal mother and father, but at some stage takes on a sort of spiritual cloak, as you might call it, to do the sort of work that's happening on the earth. Would that be correct?
I think that's one way of looking at it. You know, I don't think there's a whole lot of right and wrong in this area. It's not that specific. I think that these books open up possibilities of different perspectives. So people are going to interpret it, you know, according to what they need at the time.
Right.
But I like the way you put that very much.
Thank you. I'm interested in this aspect of DNA. Did she say anything more about it, how it affects us or things like that?
Well, and basically she describes that we have a spiritual body which is comprised of love and will and this legacy that comes through our spiritual DNA that is passed to us by our spiritual parents, our spiritual mother, and our spiritual father. I'll read a little part of that. Because it's very beautiful. The words grace and legacy are kind of used together in this chapter. Grace is the saving stamp of our spiritual elders, our team, and our spiritual parents. All right, so the element of grace is generated by our elders, our team, and our parents. It is equivalent to the DNA of the body. Your physical body is sealed with the genes of your biological ancestry, stretching back far into antiquity. Similarly, your soul is branded by the spiritual legacy of your spiritual family, which includes members from many teams. Your spiritual family is forever growing in offspring. Teams merge for projects and individuals collaborate for certain purposes, but the core team is eternal. This seal of grace provides the fallback protection for your soul. It is your key to your spiritual family's Akashic records. It is the comfort of your spiritual mother's embrace and the wrapped around support of your spiritual father. It is the power of your spiritual grandparents and the wisdom of your spiritual great-grandparents and all those beyond them. It is your direct line to your lineage, a lineage that is comprised of pairs of mature souls. And our gifts, our spiritual gifts are held, embedded in this DNA, just like our physical gifts are embedded in our DNA.
Right.
And activation of that DNA occurs as we develop and grow, and certain events occur in our lives, and certain teammates show up in our lives to awaken and stir ourselves to remembrance. And then these gifts become apparent. These gifts can emerge, just like a child learning to play the piano. When the opportunity is given, that talent can show itself.
So all of this help that these teams come here to give through their earthly representative, that is presumably to help other souls to evolve. So what is the ultimate purpose? What is the goal that we're all aiming for?
Well, it's made very clear that growth is eternal and that there isn't some ceiling that we're supposed to hit, that it's a never-ending process. And we really are encouraged to live in the now, to live in the moment, rather than, you know, where am I going? What am I supposed to do when I get there? Truly in the present moment the present moment is the culmination of your entire existence. Everything you are is in this moment. I mean, everything you've been, everything you've done, everything you are is in this moment. So it's learning not to constantly project forward or think there's another goal outside of this moment. I don't know if that answered your question.
Oh, yes, indeed. So what you're really saying, I suppose, is to take things as they come. We're continually going forward. And rather than try to plan something ahead, literally to wait for it to come to us.
I think that probably you would agree, and most of your listeners, that the work is an inner work, because it all has to do with our vibrations, and you know, by raising our vibrations through expanding our perception, we will move into what our legacy is meant to be and already is. She says over and over again that far too much emphasis is put on outer situations, that we're doing it backwards, you know, when we do that. Well, I've got to have this before I can I've got to have a room to meet in before I can hold a meditation group. I'm just giving an answer, you know, or I've got to plan this. I've got to make this happen before I can do A, B, C. Right. When the truth is, the inner work, if it's done properly, will make all of those pieces fall into place. Somebody asked me last night, because we have a discussion book that has formed around these books, and yes, we were talking about reincarnation, because that's, some people are comfortable with that concept and some aren't. And what it says in this book, I really relate to, because she says, remember, there's really only one life. We have one life. We just live it in many dimensions and many kinds of bodies. And to stop thinking so much about reincarnation and who was I and how many years did I live or what century was I born in, you have one life, always. It's just lived in many, many places, just like we have many jobs or many homes that we go from place to place using. But we have one life. And she said it really would help people to shift their thinking to understanding this fluidity of the one life.
Right. Now, what did your mother mean by talking of the great gift of the earth experience? Can you explain that?
Yes. Well, in all through the books, and there's a whole chapter in book two called by that name, all through the books, she keeps saying, I'm not giving any of this insight into the other side, because there's a lot of description of the existence on the other side. Mm-hmm. I'm not giving this because in order to make you want to be anywhere than you are. She says the earth is an absolutely incredible place. It is in a marvelous opportunity. And in this in this chapter, it's the first chapter of book two, because it's so important. She points out, your teammates want you to realize that the earth is a magical school created by magnificent forces, and you are most fortunate to be attending. Tremendous planning went into your enrollment in this school, and the most vigilant of care has been offered to its upkeep. Therefore, your full participation in life and your most sincere and passionate efforts to uplift the corner of the world in which you find yourself is expected. Great care was given to the timing of your entry, for certain individuals had to arrive there before you to prepare conditions that would be conducive to your growth. They had to remain beside you for a certain length of time in order to see those plans through. And you agreed to make certain achievements so that those who are coming after you may build upon what you leave behind. Entering the earth is a privilege, a special opportunity, and there are many who are waiting for the right conditions to be arranged for them, just as they were for you, before they can come. It's an extremely direct and strongly worded chapter. I think many people tend to, and I've met many people on a spiritual journey, and I can say in the past, maybe I was even a little this way myself, kind of look at the physical challenges on this earth and think, well, you know, I'll tolerate this and get through this life, but good grief, you know, this crazy place I'm in, I don't really want to be here sometimes. So there's a lot of material, a lot of this material really encourages us to stop thinking like that and to recognize, you know, what a beautiful gift this earth is, this school is. And I never had really thought that deeply about how much care and preparation had to go into getting things ready for us to be here as individuals. So our DNA could be activated along the way by certain people coming and going and experiences coming and going that are definitely not random. And we really have a duty to leave behind the best we can for those who come after us, spiritually speaking.
Well, thank you, Francis. That was a good explanation for the great gift of Earth experiences. Just moving on to another aspect of the book, what was meant by vibrational spheres? Was that other dimensional levels or other planets?
Not exactly. I think it's one of the most powerful messages in Book 2 is that of vibrational spheres. And it's basically the concept that every single thing we think, I'm just going to say think, of course what we do, but our doing is directed by our thinking. We are always contributing our vibrations to sort of a collective combination of the same vibrations. So if we're habitually sending forth love, peace, and goodwill, this energy is coming together like in a big bubble, in a sense, and that these spheres are very real. They're very almost tangible things in the universe. The same thing of thoughts of anger and negativity and despair, those also clump together. And everyone is, we're always contributing to them, and we're also feeding off them. It describes how it's like a wellspring. I'm trying to find the best spot to share with you. Okay, what happens is when we have, we go into an emotional state, and I'll just pick, for example, despair. And sometimes this despair just seems to overwhelm us. It just seems to grow tremendously. Are we still on air? Okay. And so this emotion or this thought process, we can't understand why it's so overpoweringly intense. And it's because we've linked up to a vibrational sphere of that same kind of emotion, that same kind of thought. With love and harmony and kindness, we are contributing to and we're drawing out of that sphere the same energy. We're interchanging it. So we're constantly contributing to these spheres, and they're influencing everyone throughout the universe. So it's so important to be responsible for what we contribute, what sphere we link up to.
Right, Francis, you were saying, I believe, that the vibrational spheres were something that has to do with what we think and its effect, I think you were going to say, possibly on the group consciousness. So can you take it from there and just explain what that is all about?
Yes. I know that we dropped off the air momentarily, so I'll kind of backtrack a little bit.
Yes, please.
Yes. Once our thoughts enter the active thought stage, these impulses from our minds begin circulating through the bands of time and space. Then they whirl out into timelessness and spacelessness, where they duplicate, triplicate, and expand endlessly into eternity. This expansion occurs not because the thoughts themselves grow, but they're magnetically attracted to other thoughts of the same kind, eventually becoming part of enormous spheres comprised of those specific types of vibration. So this means that there exists all through the universe these countless spheres of thought collections, and all of us are connected to them. When we go into a state of great bliss and happiness, sometimes it seems like it overwhelms us. The beauty of it overwhelms us. This is because we're tapped into this collective vibrational sphere of bliss. It is not only our own bliss. Or despair. If we go into despair, this can happen during suicide. A person goes into despair, but they really tap into almost a collective despair that washes over them and overwhelms them, and it's more than their own despair. It's sort of like people who have superhuman powers in an emergency. They really have connected with that great noble urge to help another that gives right. them that superhuman power. They've connected with a vibrational sphere of that same kind of thought. Mm. So we have to be very responsible, careful about what we're contributing to, what spheres we're connecting to and contributing to, because we're always contributing. That explained a lot for me when that came through, because it really helped me to understand how our emotional state and our mental states are really connected to one another and to these collective spheres. I think the whole message right. of these is the connectiveness between all of us, among us here and them on the other side, the collectiveness of all our experiences. It's really the primary point.
Right. So would one understand that the more thoughts are centered on one particular thing, that eventually the energy grows so powerful that it manifests what the people want or desire?
Yes and no. It does and can manifest. But she says the overarching, the most powerful sphere in the universe is love. Mm-hmm. And that ultimately, everything is drawn in by this sphere. It's like it has the most intense gravity pull of all. So we may see manifestations that are less than love, along the way that we do create and that we collectively imagine together. But ultimately, in the big picture, everything will be resolved in this sphere of love.
Right. Now, there is another chapter about the wheat from the chaff. Now, would I be correct in thinking that that may refer to the coming period in which we, or a lot of us, are expecting ascension to take place?
There's very little in these books about that concept of the shift, except several mentionings that say now is an all hands on deck time for humanity.
Mm-hmm.
All hands on deck. And there's no doom and gloom in that description, but the wheat from the chaff specifically talks about taking full responsibility for who we are, where we are, or what we're doing, and to cease all blame, because just as we may grieve over the environmental conditions of today, or look back in time and say, why did that particular culture do this or that back then, hundreds and thousands of years ago? Again, we have one life, and we've lived it in many bodies. And in at one point in our one life, we very well may have been part of the problem. And that's why we're supposed to be part of the solution. So we have to stop the blaming of others and recognize our hand in it. We wouldn't be here if we hadn't been called back here to participate in correcting some of what we've all collectively created. So in the wheat from the chaff, this personal sense of responsibility and working collectively together is what's stressed. Does that seem clear in the sense
Yes, indeed. So what would you say overall is your the most powerful message in the book? Or the books, I should say.
Yes. Essentially that we're not alone, and that we really are all, we all have a team behind us, and they're working through us. Somebody asked me once, but does that mean I'm possessed, you know? And
right.
It isn't that concept. It's simply that we must remember that we are representatives of our team. And some are here with us on the earth, but there are many, many more who are not here because we are the boots on the ground, and they are in the lookout tower. And they need that perspective so they can influence us in the wisest way. And if this becomes real to a person, there's so much comfort and so much power in it and so much freedom, because if we do truly our best, and that means carry in our hearts the most pure intention, and then clear our lives in such a way that we make room for whatever shows up. We don't have to run around physically doing a lot of different things. If we do the inner work, there's a freedom in knowing that you're being used in the way that you are destined to be used, and that you're not alone, that you're not struggling along, you know, so isolated like so many people feel, and I certainly have felt before in my life. And just that security and that understanding and that feeling of dedication that one has when a team becomes a real concept that isn't just poetry anymore, but is authentic. I think that's the most important message, and it's the most liberating message in the book.
Right. And very nice, too. So what overall is said about the Supreme Creator or our God? Is there much information on that?
The word God is used from time to time. The most one that stands out in my mind is that God is love, and love is God. There's no feeling of an individual person, individual entity that is God, but that there is a universal or absolute level, an ultimate level of these principles, where all these principles culminate, and this is God. But it's certainly not presented in the in the way that some more traditional outlooks regard God.
Right. Well, I think that's a conclusion people come to as they grow in their spiritual knowledge. They realize that there is an energy that we call God, that everything is contained in, and this concept of God being in the image of us, if you like, is not actually correct. But people love to have some sort of symbol, I suppose, that they can pray to. Now, tell us a little bit about your other work with your composing, because you might like to tell our listeners a little bit about it, and then mention your website where they can get some information.
Yes. Well, my mother was a classically trained singer, and I grew up at her feet as she had her voice lessons, which really trained my ear, I suppose, because I became a songwriter. I do sing, but I'm primarily a songwriter. And I've written for a number of years spiritual music, and which is on YouTube under my name, youtube.com/Francis Key, and that's Francis with the ES. A lot of the music I did grew out of my work with refugees many years ago, and I pulled together a group of American and refugee children and formed a choir called the International Peace Performers. And those children recorded my music, and we did a lot with it. A lot of that can be found on YouTube. And then I went on to write several musicals. One of them was about my mother's life growing up in Australia, and it was put on by a local theater here. And I've had many wonderful collaborators, Cyril Verdot being my main collaborator, an incredible musician who would arrange and beautify my work, and others. So I have to speak of him in particular.
Right. So do you actually sell DVDs or such that cover your work as a composer?
Yes, I have CDs of my songs that are on YouTube. And right now, I've got several websites that are being reworked. But my email and contact information is on that website for the book, which is theteambooks.com, theteambooks with an S, .com. And there, if anyone's interested in my music, if they hear it on YouTube and would like to contact me, I can provide CDs for that, of that music too.
All right, that's fine. So is there anything else you want to add that I might not have covered so far? Is there any aspect of your mother's work with you, or even your own?
Well, I suppose in connection with these two books and the third that is coming, I would like to just say that I feel like it is the team's material, and that anything they want done with it will happen.
Right.
I haven't pursued a lot of public connections. You know, this is my second radio interview, but
right.
I'm open and willing to speak or to make public appearances of any kind. I've made a few here locally to share the books if anybody's interested. You know, I've spoken in some unity churches and a variety of places like that, and I think it has a life of its own. So I'm just offering to the listeners, if they have ideas, if they would like the book shared in any other capacity, to let me know, that I'm very
right.
willing.
So where you live might have some bearing on that. So what area do you live in?
I'm in the north part of Florida.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And I'm also planning to go to Australia sometime probably next year. I'm an Australian citizen by descent, but I've never gone there. So,
right.
I was told very clearly by my own spiritual sources, and then it was reinforced by several other sources out of the blue who came to me and said a series of coincidences, if you want to call them that, that let me know I should take this material to Australia and share it in spiritual centers there. So I'm planning that trip and looking for opportunities with people who might like to help me make that happen as well once I get there, if you have any listeners there.
So when are you aiming to do that? I mean, in the autumn or any particular time?
I have thought about this year in the autumn or possibly January 2013.
Okay, fine. Well, we'll leave our listeners to absorb that one. Just coming back to your two books that are in print, can people buy them direct from your website, or would they go to someone like Amazon?
No, right now they're simply on the website. I haven't done anything commercial, like I said, mm-hmm. and the prices on there include the shipping. Unless they're out of the country, out of the USA, just contact me and I'll let them know what that additional price would have to be. Somebody just ordered two from Australia, so, you know, sometimes they have to go a long way. But
And I warn you that the price of postage has gone up very substantially in the UK, but of course you'll be sending yours in, won't you? Not out.
yes, but it's gone up too. You know, it's not inexpensive. But yes, it is. The website is theteambooks.com, and on there also is are a few videos. One of them is a song called "Instrument of Peace," which I am singing with the children. So you can hear one of my pieces on that site yes. as well.
Well, I think you're doing some very, very extremely useful work for spirit and for the light. You're obviously making a good success of it. So when will your third book be coming out? Have you actually got a date for it?
I don't have an exact date, but I'll say okay. within about 3 months.
About 3 months. Okay, fine. Well, I think we've actually, as far as I can make out, bearing in mind the short breaks we had in the program, we must be coming to the end of it. So I wish to thank you very, very much for coming on. It's been very interesting speaking to you. And
likewise.
The messages that your mother has passed, which we've only briefly touched upon, are of a very, I would say, high quality, if that's the right expression. So I think people reading your books will gain a lot of knowledge from them.
Thank you. I agree. Those who are reading them now would agree too. It's been
yes,
a lot of powerful experiences come out of for people out of these books. So thank
I'm sure
you
for the opportunity. So. Well, you're very welcome, and say thanks again. Right, friends, sorry about the short breaks there. We get this problem sometimes with the internet. My guest next week will be Anne Eller. She was a personal assistant in 1985 with Dr. J. Allen Hynek, obviously before he passed away. And she's written a book because of her connection with Dr. J. Allen Hynek. It's called Dragon in the Sky, Prophecy from the Stars. And she speaks about UFO research, aliens, meeting the aliens, the government cover-up, about planet attacks, which is known as Nibiru, 2012, spiritual ascension. So I think, again, that's going to be another very interesting guest. So I will thank you very much for being with me today. God bless you all. Thank you.